I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's the My First Gig Podcast. Whoa. Sharing stories of first gigs and shows. Comedians sharing their memories. The fun and entertaining, exciting and crazy. With Dwayne Dugan as your host. It's the My First Gig Podcast.
Well, 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 my little friends, my little dancing little boys, my oh-so super soft babies. How are we, guys? Welcome to My First Gig with me, Dwayne Dugan. Hope you're having a nice time. Welcome to the podcast. I hope you're listening early, ad-free and extended on patreon.com/myfirstgigpod. Are we getting into the plugs early? Oh, you bet your ass we are. How are we, guys? Thank you for tuning in this week. Thank you for tuning in last week if you did. Last week had a great interview with Brody Snook. Check that out if you haven't. There's some great stuff out there, guys. If you haven't, like, listened to these, you can go back and listen to them. If you're coming to just listen to me, well, my ticket sales don't reflect that. But if I ever have tickets to sell, buy them. You know, there's this great thing I've realized. Even if you're in, you know, somewhere in Arizona, you can buy tickets to any show I put on in Dublin and I'll still get the money because, you know, who doesn't want me to have money if not me? So help me out, be a bro. On the topic of money, which is so gross, so what's that posh word people use? It's a little regro, it's a little row. I don't know any words, but it was my brother's 15th birthday this week. He was 15, so I've nicknamed him Quarter Past, which I'm pretty proud of. Yeah, we on board, we like it. And he had a little party, not even a big thing, just like friends over for pizza and stuff like that, playing PlayStation and stuff. And he came in and like showed us all the money he'd got from just that little group of people. I'm like, when did this happen? Because my dad was saying that, oh, they send the kids over, even if they're not invited, on the birthday with a card and 20 quid in an envelope. And I'm like, huh? When did this happen? Like, people would come to my birthday and you wouldn't bring 20 quid in an envelope. You'd go to the party. And that was it. It's like, you see confirmations and communions now. They come out with millions of quid. Literally millions. You know, if you see that, like, Forbes top millionaire list, it's all kids who have made their confirmation. And while, like, 2 minutes into a podcast, this reeks, OPU, it reeks of bitterness and jealousy of rich children, which is strange. I remember my confirmation, I had £45. And that's the money I got. I think it was from my grandparents and my uncle. And maybe my mother gave me money as well. But my mother would have, like, taken me to dinner and probably bought me a gift or something like that. But I had £45 the next day. And so while I'm like, here, where can I get some of these big bucks that the kids are getting? That day that I had 45 quid was the best day of my life. I went into Cork City. We're talking summer 2000. And I had £45 and I bought a CD, compact disc of a band, an album. I don't remember what. We're talking maybe, talking about 20 quid, but I'm already out of money then. Because I remember I bought WWF Survivor Series 1998. Because it's a deadly game that we're playing. The Coronation of the Rock. To make it somewhat interesting for the people who are like, is he talking about wrestling? Oh, you bet you baby ass I am. And I remember those videos, VHSs, were $24.99. So the album, maybe I got an album on sale, because I don't think the wrestling tapes ever went on sale. So maybe I got an album on sale, because I had £5 left over. And I went down and I had a McDonald's. And I remember like going home on the bus being like, do you know what? Today, if this is how my life is going to be, it doesn't get any better than this. I love it. I appreciate it. I need it. And I long for those times. We can't even, you know, that was Survivor Series 1988. I was buying it almost 2 years later. And I hadn't seen it because I didn't see it at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday night when I was 10 and I had school the next day. So I had to wait until it finally showed up in the shop. There was no rhyme or reason or even schedule. It wasn't like you got the VHS tape, say, a year behind, and then month to month you got each new one. They just got random ones in, and there'd be like one copy of it as well. And that, I used to love that. You never knew what you'd find going right, because you didn't have access to everything. Spotify and YouTube, just in this instance, talk about videos and music. Like if it's where I'm recording now, it's 12 past midnight. And actually there's a stand-up clip I want to go watch, Rod Gilbert's The Book of John. And I know that that's out at midnight. And it's like, I can just go watch that now. I can buy it in the middle of this, while this is exporting, and chuck it on the telly and watch it. Like, do you remember you used to get the bus into town and used to go in and used to hope that it was there? Oh, is it in stock? Is it not in stock yet? And even like sometimes games or CDs, they might not be in stock the day of release. Because they go, oh, well, we don't get stock until Tuesdays. Release day is Friday. It doesn't matter. We get stock on Tuesdays. And you go back in, you get the album, you're just reading the sleeve notes at home, on the bus home, trying to figure out the melodies behind the lyrics. I love that. I think that's why I got into, I don't collect vinyls, but I have a collection. So I like to get albums I enjoy. So that is collecting vinyls. But I don't want to be collecting vinyls guy, because it's a bit uncool now, which makes it extra cool. Oh shit, I collect vinyls. And it's just to have that, you know, just a bit of appreciation for what you're consuming. Because I think everything's just a bit too fast food now. Don't get me wrong, I love McDonald's, but you know, you need a steak once in a while. What does that mean? I don't know. I went to a festival last week that my girlfriend was performing on, full of economic people, economists, not economics, economists, and they were like, oh, and you know, if you have sausages but you get more money and then you buy steak, well, this rule is the rule of measuring the increase in your consumption. I'm like, what are you talking, like, nerds, man. And like, I'm doing a podcast about comedy, which is pretty nerdy and stupid, but like, if you feel that you're nerdy, go to this festival. Great crack, good fun, Kilkenny, beautiful city, but my god, just spend some time with proper nerds and you go, do you know what? Fair play to them. But like, they've discussed more in an hour than I've ever known in my life. Too much information, man. Let's just all be a bit ignorant. I had trouble with the word economist a while ago. Like, let's all be a bit stupid, can't we? If everyone's so smart, then it's just easy, isn't it? Let's be a little bit ignorant. I think we'd be a bit more peaceful. In the same way that we don't need to have Spotify and YouTube to get everything that we want. We don't need Twitter and the news 24 around the clock to tell us all the things that we don't necessarily need yet. Like, yeah, we should be aware of what's going on and everything. Oh God, what am I talking about? Here I am presenting a podcast where I talk in my sitting room at midnight and expect you to listen to it. But I'm like, hey, let's not learn everything about the news, okay? But let's not. I don't know. My guest today is Kai Humphries. This was recorded just before the pandemic. I think I said Paul Smith was the last episode I did before the pandemic, but this might have been it. This was very close. This was, he was over doing the Laughter Lounge in Dublin, and I met up with him one of the mornings, and we had a fun chat. And yeah, glad to finally get it out. It's the penultimate episode in the series. Hang about till after the episode, and I will reveal who the finale is. Another early 2020 recording that I'm finally very excited about finally putting out. So, yeah, if you don't know Kai Humphries, he is a Geordie comic. I always feel that Geordie is like a derogatory term, but I don't know. He's from Newcastle. Yeah, he is, isn't he? He's from Newcastle. Spent some time in Scotland, living in London, but he is part of basically Daniel Sloss's tour. He's the other half. They have a podcast together. And if you've seen Daniel Sloss's tour, you've probably seen Kai. And yeah, cracking show always with those two lads. If you've got someone like Kai guaranteed this year to support that, then the main act better be good as well. And it is, and it becomes a very good show. But no support today. If anything, this is the support for Kai's episode. And let's just get into it, man. Let's do it. Will we? You ready? Pause this if you're not ready. It's awkward now because I can't tell you to unpause it. But look, if you're back, welcome back. Hope you're refreshed. Let's just not waste any more time. We got a banger here, guys. So sit back, relax, enjoy the beautiful, the lovely, the delicious and entertaining episode of My First Gig with Kai Humphries.
Yeah, some places that we didn't even imagine. We went to Russia and done a gig in Moscow, went to Tokyo. But like every time we're just there for one day. So we'd go in, like do the gig, see some of the sights and then out of there.
So you didn't get to see like lots of hotel rooms and stuff like that?
A lot of hotel rooms, a lot of airports and stuff. But yeah, we still got after it. We still went out, like we're represented socially. You know, we went and got smashed. We drank a lot of whiskey in Tokyo. We drank a lot of vodka in Russia.
Well,
you just deal with it in the morning. The 5 a.m. lobby call with a vodka hangover. Brutal.
Any non-comedy highlights from the last, from some strange places?
Non-comedy highlights. Yeah, we went. We had a gap in the tour. We had like 2.5 weeks off in September, and we all went to Hawaii. Just like 10 of us, like all the guys and girls, like my wife and a bunch of my friends. We just went to Hawaii and just chilled the fuck. So that was probably the highlight because it was just this storm of just movement and traveling, and then just boom, we're just in the fucking nicest place in the world, just on this island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. So. Yeah, that serenity was there.
Yeah, like I think if I had a blank plane ticket anywhere, Hawaii's what I'm writing on it.
That's exactly the thought pattern that we had. We just went, right, we've made some money from touring, we've got 2 weeks, we've got a blank plane ticket. That's what we said, like if we could be anywhere in the world for these couple of weeks off, where would we be?
And is it just like the movies? Sitting down, beaches?
Oh yeah. Yeah,
drinking out of coconuts.
It's glorious. The skies are fantastic. The sunsets are fantastic. It's just sweet. We had like a really nice villa as well, so it was hard to leave the villa. But like, there's so much of Hawaii at our disposal, but we just want to get a chill by the pool here.
That's still Hawaii, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's still Hawaii. So before we kick into your first gig, I want to ask you if I ask what's your favorite memory or your first memory of comedy, whether that be stand-up or anything else. What comes to mind, do you think?
Let's go first memory, early doors, Jack D on television. He'd done a routine that had me dad in stitches where he was pointing at a Mojo rapper on the floor and he was saying Mojo in a funny voice, Mojo being a little sweet, like a kind of blackjack kind of sweet. And I remember my dad being in stitches. I didn't quite get what the joke was, but I was just like, that guy's inciting a reaction like that out my dad. That's fucking pretty cool what he's doing. That's my earliest memory of comedy, but that didn't really... That didn't make me go, oh, that's what I want to be. That was just my earliest memory. Take it to when I was 25 years old. My friend had a birthday party where we went paintballing through the day. And then we went to, have you heard of the Hyena Cafe in Newcastle?
No.
Doesn't exist anymore. But it's a bit of a bear pit of a gig. Like, it's renowned as a bear pit. Like, it's meant to be, like, really nasty, like, heckly, boozy, drinky, like a jongler's type of gig, right? But, so we went there, and I didn't know it had that reputation at the time. It was just the first ever comedy club I'd heard of or been to. And I was in stitches watching these lads on stage. And I was trying to remember who was on, right? There was a black guy called Valentine Fly Guy, who I'm guessing now is a character act. I don't think that was his real name. But I've not since I started stand-up, I've not seen him. And there was an Irish guy hosting. And he'd trying to think of the joke that he did that I remember is he'd done this thing about doing a weed deal. And he was like on the back of this truck and he went everywhere and he really like dragged out the story of this wheel deal that he'd done. But like he took a hit and then when he went back to his mates, he told them about the journey that he'd been on. He went, nah, mate, he just walked over there. But the weed was so strong that it made it feel like this massive journey. And that was I've butchered his joke. But that's what it was. And I don't think I've worked with that guy since I started stand-up either. So there was another guy on the bill too who I can't remember much of. I think he was reading like suggested greeting cards. Like, that was his shtick. So I watched this gig with these three guys on, and I was laughing, I was in stitches, but I was also analysing, going, like, in my head, the cogs were turning, going, is that their job? Is that what they do for a living? Is that how they make money? Do they then drive home and they go and fucking on the yard laying bricks, or is that their mainstay? That's all I could think about was, like, is this an option? Because in my head, like, I thought there was just Jack D, Jasper Carrot, Joe Brand, Peter Kay, Leigh Evans, I'm already running out, Billy Connolly. I thought there was just this handful of... Because it was before the McIntyre boom, when McIntyre brought a bunch of people on TV, and I hadn't watched any of the Apollos. I just thought there was these, like, literally, like, a dozen comedians in the whole world, and then I realised there's this subculture underneath the mainstream that people are just making a solid living being stand-ups, and I just instantly just done my research on that.
I like this when you're watching Jack D. I like that as a memory anyway, because I think that's one of my earliest memories was this Happy Hour TV program, which was 30 minutes every week, and I was just like, that doesn't make sense, and I didn't get the joke. But it's that you didn't necessarily understand why it was funny, but you liked the fact that he was getting someone to laugh.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of piqued your interest at that point.
Yeah, and just the craft of it all just seemed to be like, there's just this guy with so much confidence that he's just like on his own and talking and people were laughing at him. And it was like, even though I couldn't quite understand, like even when my parents were watching Billy Connolly, I don't think I could like tune into his accent at the time when I was that young. But I was just fascinated by him.
And that club now, What made you go? So you obviously started seeing bits of stand-up around and...
So no, I went just because it was a pre-arranged birthday day. Like I said, paintball through the day, comedy in the evening. And I was just a guest. I was just going along for the ride. Okay. Like, I didn't have anything to do with the planning of it. I didn't even know about this comedy club. That was just like 10 miles from my house. I live like near Newcastle, in a place called Blyth. So we travelled in to Newcastle, went to the Hyena. I was like, fucking, this is great. And then... I picked up this bit of paper, like this flyer's a strong word. Someone had clearly just used the printer in the house and cut it with scissors. And it said new material night, the first Wednesday of every month, or last Wednesday of every month, so it happened to be. It said new professional comedians trying new material and new acts, I don't know how it was worded, but basically cutting their teeth. So I see this like fucking haphazard like flyer and I take it and I hustle my friends saying, hey, every Wednesday, me and my friends used to do a come down with me, and I can't even remember this. So this is 2008. I don't know if this predates come down with me or if we were inspired by it, but we used to take turns at going around, there was six of us, and we'd take turns at going to each other's house on a Wednesday, and that person had to cook. And none of us were very good at cooking at all, so that's why we did it. We just like pushed ourselves to try and like come up with a meal for six people. And I managed to convince these six lads, well, five lads and me, that on the last Wednesday of the month, instead of doing the come down with me, can we go to this comedy club and have a look at this new material night? And they got on board. And when we went, we made up half of the audience. So there's 12 of us in the same club in the Hyena, which probably, I'm going to say 300. It's probably a 300-seater. And there was 12 of us in like a horseshoe around the stage. And it just like the room was just so empty compared to like a couple of Saturdays ago when I was there on the birthday party.
How did that feel like in comparison.
It was so no frills, like there was no glitz and glamour about it. And we were a good crowd, actually, when I look back and think how difficult a 12-seater audience can be in such a big room. We were really giving, there was no self-conscious, like we didn't shrink into ourselves because we were so like the front row and the only people there. We got right into the show, we had a good laugh, and it turns out the other people that were there to see one of their mates who was getting up and doing a spot. And the bill was actually great. It was Gavin Webster, who was running it. He was hosting it. Dave Johns was on. Stephen Petty, Carl Hutchinson, Alfie Joey. Handful of guys who like I work with still regularly. And I just approached Gav Webster. I thought, this is my in. I was like, hey, man, if I can come along next month and jump on, like the lad who had his friends there, I was like, I'll bring a few of my friends, but I reckon I could get probably like 20, 30 people to come if I hustle a little bit and get like a nice bigger audience for you. So I just used like I can bring some bums on seats if I can have some stage time, and I hustled it that way, and Gav was like really delighted for us to do it. So that's what I did, and I ended up bringing like way over 100 people.
Holy shit.
It was like at the birth of Facebook. That was the dawn of Facebook, I'm sure, 2008.
Yeah.
And I just...
Events. That's it.
I just connected with a bunch of people who I'd played football with, people who I went to school with, people who I'd worked with over, like, I worked in leisure centres, and I'd worked at a couple by then. Like, I was on my third leisure centre. I was working my way up the leisure centre scene.
You're just connecting an audience each job.
I brought in an audience. I was, like, getting in touch with people, going, hey, I haven't seen you in a little while. Hey, I'm doing my first stand-up comedy gig. It could be a fucking disaster, but, like, I'd love you to be there to watch us, even if I fail. Like, I'd love you to be there to support us. And I just, like, when I look back now, that's a... It was mad that I wasn't nervous about that. That I was just bringing everybody from every walk of life to come and watch us potentially fail.
Yeah. So, like, but you go to that first one as part of the birthday party, and then you go check out the new material night.
Yeah.
Like, at what point are you thinking, oh, I'd like to do this? I'd like to, you know, be the guy on stage, not the guy sitting in the audience.
Oh, so the minute I wanted to be the guy on stage was the minute I watched, when the gig started, when the comedy gig started. I'm in the audience. I've never seen comedy before in my life. I've never even been to see, like, a big arena name. Like, I haven't been to see any comedy at all. And I walked on stage and everybody, all these drunks, like, stopped chatting. Most of the drunks stopped chatting and start paying attention to the stage. And then the first laugh comes. I was laughing, and I was watching the stage on two levels. I was watching the stage on the level of, I'm a punter, I'm enjoying it. I was watching the stage of, I've just figured out what I want to do, and I want to know if that's an option. So it was like a penny drop moment.
Yeah, like there's not, like it's, I think a lot of people spend their time, you know, kind of enjoying comedy itself.
Yeah.
And then once they see the kind of the pathway. But no, just straight away you see the act and go, hold on, well, if he's doing it,
yeah,
I could do it.
Yeah, I wasn't a scholar. I wasn't a scholar of the craft. I didn't have any history of, apart from like I said, my earliest memory was watching Jack Day and stuff like that. Like I'd seen comedy on TV. I used to love watching. They Think It's All Over. Oh, yeah. Nick Hancock and Lee Hurst and that. Like I used to love watching that. So I have like been a consumer of comedy, but I'm never a scholar of comedy. And then the penny drops and I start doing my research and I become a scholar from that day onwards. That's when I started studying it.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, so like... you know, you're saying that, you know, you invite people from jobs and from football and you're just connecting with people on Facebook. So,
yeah.
Like, you're quite a social person already, were you? Or?
Yeah. I would always, like, kind of lead the charge and organise and stuff in general. Yeah. Like, if there's a, like, I'd book, like, football pitches, AstroTurf, 11-a-side and try and get, like, 20 lads together for a game.
So very proactive.
And I'd be proactive about getting shit done.
Well, yeah. Like, so what age are you at this time?
I was 25. Yeah, like I'd organised my like my friend's stag do. I was the best man, and I'd organised a big stag do holiday and stuff. So I was like, I did have form of getting people together
and hosting dinner parties at 25. That's it's, yeah, you're getting stuff done.
Yeah,
I was making beans and waffles at 25. I still am, to be honest. I can't lie. So like you bring these people. Like people go to their first gig and they barely have 20 people in the audience. Never mind 100 people there to see them. So I'd say that, like, it must have been wild. But before we talk about the actual first gig, you go up to Gavin that night. You say, "Look, if I bring some mates, can I get some stage time? How much stage time are you given, by the way?"
You give us 10.
10 minutes.
My first gig was 10
straight
minutes.
Straight out the way. Yeah. So what do you do? Like, how long do you have? It's a month, is it?
I've got a month, yeah.
You got a month.
So I've got a month.
To write 10 minutes. How do you go about writing if you've never, like,
so I, like, I didn't have anybody to ask for advice from. I didn't have anything to go off. I just knew I was going to get up and I was going to do material. So I started writing it. I was typing it out. I never wrote anything with a notepad and pen. I typed everything. And I was a little bit, I broke the rules a bit because I was watching YouTube videos and then, like, inspiring like routines of stuff that I'd seen. So I would watch someone, like I saw it quite a few times. People get, you know, when they go, people ask, "Oh, you're a comedian, like tell us a joke," but you wouldn't say, "Oh," and I think there was a Bob Monkhouse one, "Oh, you're a cartographer, draw me a map." So I was like, "Oh, I'm gonna have my own version of that." And I think mine was like, "Oh, you wouldn't say you're epileptic, go ahead, swallow your tongue." So I was like, I was taking like kind of hacky jokes and then trying to make them my own.
Mm.
So I didn't know the writing process, but I did write some original stuff like as well in the midst of it. I wrote a joke about remembering being a sperm, like a really flight of fancy like routine about like how I was the fastest and I was like pretending to swim on stage and I thought I was ahead and then I saw like a bunch of more sperm ahead of us and then I remembered that must be because I was in the left ball and my dad's left ball must hang below the right ball so they got out first so I've got to beat all them and I was just like this wild flights of fancy like that but the way I wrote them was I was typing them down and anytime I was expecting a laugh, which I soon learned, like, you can't really call it. Sometimes you'll get a laugh when you're not expecting it off a turn of phrase. And sometimes you'll get a punchline that you think's going to be the big one and it'll just get a little titter. And you have to restructure the whole joke. But what I was doing with confidence is putting in red, in a red font, where the laugh was going to be. And if I had too much black type and without any red, I would go and punch it up. I would go, right, I need to split this paragraph and make it so that there's a red bit in there. And so when I had my sheets of paper printed out, it would be like equal parts or like at least like 60%, like, sorry, 40% red, so that like when the payoffs were abundant. And that's how I wrote for the, like, in the month and the build up.
That's crazy planning for like, For never having done it before.
Yeah, and I memorised it all too. I would stand in my room and just like fucking just talking to like a tin of deodorant and just pace the floor and just like get it like word for word. Just like, I mean, I would have been a nightmare if I got heckled because everything was a sign of memory. On like day one, I was phoning it in.
Yeah, like so like you'd route 1A to B kind of.
Yeah.
What do you do that day? Are you working that day? You said you're working in leisure centres?
Yeah, I had a shift. I actually, I practised in the maintenance bay of the sports centre. I was so shameless with this, right? Like, I got everybody that was on shift that wasn't on the swimming pool at that time. So the maintenance technician, the cleaner, one of the receptionists, my supervisor, and a couple of other leisure attendants. So maybe 7 people on staff, right? I got them to come into the maintenance bay where, like, it's like the kind of the woodwork room at school where like anything that needs like fixing or doing gets done in there. So there's all these like a fucking defunct like spin bike in the corner and like an old badminton net that's collapsed. So we're just in this kind of big cupboard with seven people, and I'd just done it for them. I just performed it for them in the maintenance bay before I'd ever done my first gig. So that it essentially was my first gig, really. I mean, if you take away the best man speech I did, that was my first stand-up performance. And then it just helped me assign it to memory, and it helped me with the confidence of standing up in front of people. I just threw myself in at the deep end.
Well, yeah, so it's like, it sounds like you've got confidence, you got planning, you got support. So yeah.
I was very sure about it. I was like, I look back and I really admire the confidence that I had back then. Like, I mean, I've got confidence now, I really do, but like to do what I did then is like, I sometimes look back at that young kid and go, fucking go on you. you confident little bastard.
He could have done politics or something. So I have to assume the gig went well then.
Yeah, I was showing off in front of my pals. It was just like the same as how sometimes just like when I played football for a Sunday league team, I would go in and I would just like take the piss and I would roast and I'd tell stories from the night before and I'd hold court. And it just felt a bit like that. I was like, I'm like in a room of people I'm familiar with, so I can just relax. I can be myself. I can...
So you're kind of a bit of a like the funny guy, kind of joker, like growing up then?
Yeah, but I didn't consider it that. I didn't like label myself as the funny guy, but I would always have something to say.
You enjoyed having something to say and maybe having a reaction from it or something like that.
Yeah.
So it comes to the night then. Do you remember the format of the night?
Yeah, I was on somewhere like in the middle. There was, because it was mostly pro acts, but there was a couple of other new acts. The guy who was up when I went the first time, he was up again, but this time with a bigger audience. So I was on like back to back with him, like they put us kind of in the middle. Alfie Joey closed it. I think there maybe was about like six or seven acts on. I couldn't exactly name the entire lineup, but
oh, that's fair.
I might have it written down somewhere. You know, I stopped in 2017, and I'm gutted I did. I wrote down every gig that I had, every single gig. I would put like how many minutes it was, where it was, what town. But I'd done it on Word. It wasn't on a spreadsheet, and it ended up getting to the point where it was too long that it would take days and days of data entry to put it into a spreadsheet and make it sortable. And I stopped in 2017. I'm gutted about that. But every time I worked with a new comedian, I wouldn't put the lineup on all of the things, but I'd add their name to the list. So at the bottom of this list of gigs, like, so it ended up on like page 100 or whatever, I'd add another comedian to that list. So I've got this like long. So all it would be for to check that is I could go in, check the first six names on the list of comedians I've worked with, and that's my first gig. So
I keep a similar list, and yeah, I think I missed a couple of months and then trying to track it back or something like that.
Yeah.
And you miss some, and it's like,
yeah, because I'd done that a few times. I had tracked it back a few times, but then in 2017, I'd done like two festivals in Australia where I was just fucking like five gigs a day almost. And some of the gigs weren't even like in my schedule. I was just picking them up last minute. And I was like, it's going to be impossible to pull that back. So that's where that ends.
No, that's a shame.
So yeah, I nearly recorded it for 10 years. Yeah, I got like 9 years of recording.
When you see the other acts go up on stage, so that you got the pro acts and then you got kind of the new acts in the middle. Is there any of the new acts on before you? Do you remember?
I can't remember that. I think it was after the first act, I just went in my head. I went in my notes. Like, I'm just looking through. Because what was weird is I could remember everything in my living room. And now I'm in this social environment where I know everybody in the room. So it's kind of like hosting your own birthday party. So I'm chatting to people, trying to stay present. And be like, oh, hello, mate, how you doing? Catching up with people. Sometimes for the first time in months, maybe even like over a year. And I'm seeing people and I'm smiling and I'm hosting almost like socially anyway. That I wasn't thinking about my stuff. So when the gig started, I was like, oh, I've got a little bit of time to myself now. And I went, at the time, there was a little like cupboard at the side of the stage. That was the through path onto the stage. I know they refurbished it a couple of times and moved the stage around a couple of times, but to the left of the stage at the Hyena, there's this small cupboard, and I went in there, and I'm looking at my notes, and I just can't get it to stick. I couldn't get my mind to like hold 10 minutes of stuff at once. So what I told myself is memorize your first line up until the first red bit, and then just hope it flows after that. Just like, if it flows, it flows. Like, you just try and remember the links, and sure enough, I did. Like, I drilled it enough times that all I needed to do was remember the first bit. And when I got to the end of the first bit, I remembered what that led to. So instead of just Like, I just let it come. But when I realised that that was the approach I was going to take, that's the moment I started really shitting myself. I was backstage like, fucking how have you ended up in this situation? What kind of fucked up decisions have you made in your life that you're now...
Just looking at the curtain going, ah, there's one or two people here to see me.
Oh my God, yeah. Fuck, man, that's some nerves. Like, I haven't had... Like, yeah, because them nerves would stay around for the first couple of years. Especially I started running gigs too, and that's a different type of nerves when you run gigs. Because this is what happened, right? So after I brought them people to the gig, I got asked to do a gig in a place called Hoco 10, which isn't a gig, it's a bar, and decided to put a gig on. Again, it was Gav Webster that was booking it, and he got me on the bill, obviously open spot, unpaid. But the manager of the venue got in touch with us, and he says, can you come and collect some tickets and sell some tickets, right? Now I picked up like 40 tickets off him, and I sold every one of them, like a tenner each. And then when I got there, they were the only people at the fucking gig. So I get in touch with Gav Webster saying, hey, I'm just wondering, like, did everybody else get paid for that gig? Because I didn't, and I sold all the tickets. And Gav Webster, obviously, there's this fucking open spot asking him about getting paid. And he, like, it was really nice of him to send us this email, but he's just like, mate, you don't realise you've got to fucking put your graft in this industry. You've got to do everything you can to get on the bill. And I do understand that that was my pound of flesh to get on the bill, was selling those tickets. I didn't get booked because of my ability. I got booked because I can bring people. So I should be grateful at that stage time. But that also, the penny drop with me, is like, I can sell tickets. I don't need this fucking middleman at Hoco 10 for me to put it on. So I started running gigs almost immediately, knowing that I could bring people along. So I would book a lineup and I would put myself on, not as the MC, because I think, like, looking now, that's a mistake a lot of new acts make, is to put themselves on as the MC, whereas the MC is an important part of the night. I'd saw that early and I didn't put myself on as MC, and I pat myself on the back for that too, because that was wisdom beyond my comedy years. I put myself on as the open spot every month. I would just go on and do a 10 spot every month. It would be 10 spot and you. It'd be a pro act bill, and then I'd make some money off running the gigs. So that's Punch Drunk Comedy. I still run the gigs now. I run them with my brother. It's a monthly night.
Very nice. I want to stick with that time that you're in the cupboard next to the gig.
Yeah.
When the act before you goes on and you know you're next, I'm sure those nerves even then crank up some more.
Yeah.
You now know, look, well, obviously there's people here to see it. You have your stuff. Or, you know, you memorise up until that first red bit, you say.
Yeah.
Do you remember what that first bit was?
I think it was that line. I think it was the line about the people say you're going to do a stand-up comedy. It might have been that. It might have been, that could have been my first joke. It could have been a one about picking up some flowers from your girlfriend or something, but like getting them off the roadside. I took them down off a lamppost. I get them off the lamppost and I go, oh, my mum will like those, or my girlfriend, something like that. And there was one joke early on where I picked flowers off a lamppost. It was shock comedy. It was shock value. So that was early in my set, because I remember I started with like a handful of kind of short, snappy, like non really, like they didn't open up and expand into bigger bits. And then the bit that I opened up and expanded into a bigger bit was the one about me being a sperm. I also done a bit that I cringed. I think that might have been kind of racist, about Indian people can't swear. And I think I'd seen a black comedian on YouTube doing something similar, and I was like, oh, I should do something similar to that. I was like, shit off. No. I cringe when I think about it, but I didn't know anything at the time, you know, like I was just a fucking...
Well, the reason I like to remind people is to tell them is that that's the jokes now that started everything. So a racist Indian joke now is what you have to, you owe everything to.
And then I done something like super filthy at the end. I ended where I was I'm not very good at impressions, but I can do an impression of my girlfriend. And then I was like, do you want to see an impression? You know, that like new act thing of getting the audience to validate everything. Do you want to see an impression of my girlfriend? And you fucking cut that out. And then I lay on my back, held my knees and pretended to fanny fart and go, can I pass a sock?
What a closer.
So, yeah, it was a ridiculous patchwork quilt of shite we set. But people laughed because... I don't know, like I was just daring to do it. I was like, I guess it was the novelty of it that was getting the laughs more than anything else, and maybe the fact that I was selling it well. I had a decent stagecraft from the top.
Well, so here we are, like, you know, you watch Jack D on the telly, but you're, you know, what piques your interest is seeing that he's making someone laugh.
Yeah.
And now here tonight on stage in like this proper setting now that your job is now to make people laugh and you start getting those laughs.
Yeah.
Do you remember how that made you feel? Get them yourself then.
Yeah, absolutely buzzed. Like I was fucking, it flashed by. It was like that feel, when I come off stage, it was like that feeling of jumping in a plunge pool. When you jump in and your whole breath's like taken from you, I remember coming off stage after big laughs and a nice big round of applause to walk off, and I just walk up and I just felt so invigorated, just so alive, like fucking coursing through my veins. And I think that's the bit where I was probably like, again, I've got to go again.
So put me on next.
Yeah, put me on next. I'll come up with something.
So like, yeah, there was no rest period. You wanted to do a second gig, a third gig, a fourth gig at this stage, I'd say, straight away.
Yeah, I booked that one in immediately. Gav Webster was like, yeah, do you want to come back and do it again next month? And then he booked us in for Hoco 10, which was in the interim. So I think that was my second and third gigs. And then I started discovering the forums where people were putting gigs out. This was pre-Facebook comedy forums. I heard about gong shows and I went and done a couple of gong shows and had some competitions, and I'm so glad I did them early. I'd done all them competitions and all them gong shows in my first 6 months.
Like, I find that absolutely mad, because like, so I didn't, you know, gigging here, they don't exist or anything like that, you know.
Nah.
So like, when you know, go to places like London and you see these gong shows and it's like
brutal,
like years of experience, they'll ruin you. Like, but then, you know, you chat to the guys, you're right, going, oh yeah, like, what's your crack? He's like, this is my first ever gig. And you're like, you are like, I wouldn't have a second gig if that's my first gig. I wouldn't have a 10th gig if it was my 9th gig.
Yeah.
So like, fair, like, but like, you found it helpful yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I do regular Comedy Store weekends and have done since like maybe 8 years ago, 7 years ago perhaps. And that all came because I've done a gong show. I'd done a gong show, got my open spots, continued with the open spots for a couple of years, worked my way through, done a 20 on a Thursday, and then the weekends come in, and I guess in the UK, when you do the Comedy Store, that opens up every other gig because you've passed the biggest test. So once I got in at the Comedy Store, then everybody else paid attention. So sometimes if you don't take that fast track route, and you sometimes get the Comedy Store last, sometimes never get the Comedy Store. I know like good, like solid comedians that I consider better than me still haven't got their Comedy Store gigs. And then like I got it first up. I got it before the rest of the gigs.
On that first gig, so you're sitting there right back in that cupboard. You got all the people out there, you know, as you say, you love that little guy being so confident and stuff like that. But
yeah,
then the nerves start to kick in and you know you're next, you're about to get called, you're there looking at your notes. If you today could run over, take him aside, what do you think you'd say to him if you had a couple of minutes with him?
Oh, just keep doing what you're doing. Yeah, fucking don't listen to anything I'm going to say. You've got it covered. I was I would probably tell him, right, you're going to get a lot of advice, but the best advice I can give you is just filter that advice. Some of it's going to be shite. A lot of people are going to talk to you with confidence. A lot of people are going to give you stuff that like is advice to them, but not advice to you. Just look at everything with an open mind, because sometimes you get that when you're a new comic. You get so many people who in 2 months' time you're going to be above them, but they talk to you with authority. This is like a real gatekeeper level of like permanent open spot that like will always try and tell you this is how it is, this is how it's done, this is what you've got to do. And then you soon realize that like, oh, that's they need advice. They shouldn't be giving it.
Well, there we go. Cheers for chatting for your first gig.
Yeah, thanks man, I appreciate it.
Hopefully that brought up some fun memories.
Yeah.
And another one in the books, guys. Thank you so much. Season 3, episode 11. The penultimate episode of this season. One more episode next week. And then can take a little break until the new year. Oh, only on the main feed, because Patreon, it's starting. Jim Elliott, Aidan Green, the first two episodes of the
bonus episodes of the members of the Irish comedy scene is happening. So guys, go on over to the Patreon for just €5 a month or one. There's a €5 tier and a €1 tier. I can't remember if these episodes are on the €1 tier. Maybe they're on the five. It'll tell you when you get there. Go listen to the bonus episodes. Get these episodes main feed early and ad free and extended. So there's no reason not to patreon.com/ my first gig pod. Follow at my first gig pod or follow me at Dwayne Dugan. And thank you for joining me. Next week's guest, the final guest, is going to be the absolute legend himself, Mr. Phil Jupitus. It's a you want to talk about extended? Oh boy, the main feed of this is going to be extended. I asked him for half an hour. He gave me close to 90 minutes. We had a great chat. Asked him, did he know his first joke or his first like bit at a show, which was a poem? And boy, did he. That alone is worth the price of admission. So tune in to Phil Jupitus next week. Get it early, as I said, on Patreon. And in the meantime, and in between time, somebody says that. I've robbed that, didn't I? In the meantime, and in between time, I don't know. Elastic bands make rubber hands. That was me. Decided if I'm going to rip somebody off, then I'm going to create something of my own. Right, guys? Send me your confirmation money, and we'll talk to you next week. Toodles.
It's the My First Gig Podcast. Whoa.
You've been listening to My First Gig with Dwayne Dugan on Acast. Follow online at My First Gig Pod or at Dwayne Dugan. For classic episodes, ad-free, early access and more, head to myfirstgigpod.com. This is My First Gig with Dwayne Dugan, powered by Acast. Enjoy.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.